Welcome to the Collaborative Business Podcast. My name is Pieter Simons, and today I have not one, but two guests in the podcast. Elke Jurgensen and Cato Leonard are two business partners who have written a book together about stakeholder management. We will discuss stakeholder management in our conversation today, and, well, why not immediately dive in and welcome Elke and Cato to the conversation. Elke, Cato, welcome to the Collaborative Business Podcast. After a few tries and a major power failure last week, we are finally talking to each other for the podcast. So welcome, and I'm very happy to have you here.
Thank you for inviting us.
You're welcome. So can you introduce yourself to the to our audience? Normally it's audio only. Today again we do video, so I might say listener when I mean viewer, and viewer when I say listener, but okay, we will manage that. So who are Elke and who are and Cato, and what do you do?
Okay, maybe I can start, Cato. So I'm Elke Jurgensen, and I'm the co-founder with together with Cato of Glassroots. And what we do, our company is actually focusing on helping both private organizations, companies, but also a lot of public agencies, governments, with what we call stakeholder engagements. And basically it comes down to trying to solve complex challenges by partnering up with other stakeholders. Could be internal stakeholders, so different departments or business units that have different views on problems, and if they work together, are able to work those out. Or partnerships between different companies, governments, universities, non-profit organizations, in working together and trying to solve certain issues which are just too complex to solve on your own. Mm-hmm. I have a background in corporate communications, in public relations and in public affairs. Worked for a minister as spokesperson. I had another company for 10 years in doing public affairs work in public relations. So I've seen the need for connections, the need to build kind of partnerships between the different silos, because a lot of people tend to live in their own box, in their own comfort zone, and therefore don't see certain answers outside of that comfort zone. So that's me.
Yeah, and my background is a bit different. I've been working for 20 years in the mainly internet technology sector, where innovation was the key term. And I've been working for 20 years in that area, which was very, very interesting. And then in 2011, I did something completely different. I was one of the co-founders of the G1000 in Belgium, which is now also quite popular in Holland, which is a citizens' movement for democratic innovation. So, in fact, I didn't change that much because it was, again, innovation, but in a total different area in how democracy can be innovated. I did that, and after that I saw that we delivered something quite exceptional, and I was wondering how it happened and what we did different and what was different in companies and for such a movement. And I came to the conclusion that we were totally diverse persons who organized this. We were totally different, and the strength of this difference was something I then never saw in companies. And that's why I started to think with Elke in the future for what could we do. And then we said, okay, being to realize something is to have a common goal, and then to organize and to collect stakeholders, but not only the same people from same companies or same background, but differency. And when you put differency together, you see that you can go on another level to reach your goal. So that's how, from both sides, we started something which is Glassroots, and which is specialized in stakeholder engagement.
Well, thank you for the introduction. And you mentioned just before we started the record button that you are together in business now for about 2.5-3 years?
3 years.
Okay. 3 years. Yeah. And you managed to write a book in the meantime.
Yes, what we saw when we started off Glassroots is, of course, this is something where before you start any kind of alliance between or partnership between stakeholders, you need to accept the fact that you do not no longer have all the answers to all the questions. And that's already a mindset that's a bit difficult for certain people, is leaving your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And very often we had the question of people we met with and we explained our vision. Well, that all sounds very nice, but who does it and what's the result of it? So really the bottom line, which is, of course, a very good question. And so we decided to do some research on who actually did it, who has started to build stakeholder partnerships, what works, what does not work, what can we learn from other examples. So we combine kind of two elements in the book. On the one hand, more than 50 international examples of companies, but also nonprofit organizations, governments, actually doing this and delivering results. And we combine that with interviews of 50 CEOs of local organizations to kind of get their view on how this could work in their organization. And it actually meant that we kind of crowdsourced the methodology we are using now. We didn't go out and say, okay, we found the answer to all of the questions. No, we said, this is our vision. What do you think about it? How would it work in your organization? And that's how we developed actually the book, which is full of examples, but also really tips, practices, guidelines that are not taken from any academic research, but that are taken from real case examples. So
in Dutch, the book is Vreemdgaan voor Managers, the title of the book. How would you translate that? Would you say it's cheating for managers? Or?
No,
we had that discussion several times already.
One of the foundations could be affairs for managers.
Affairs for managers.
So it's an affair, but it's also business.
Yeah, and the title clearly indicates that the managers are doing something that they are not accustomed to. So they are outside of their comfort zone, outside of their own organization. Not necessarily business, but organization.
Yes.
What is typical in that stakeholder partnerships that you found? Is there something typical in those 50 examples?
I think what's typical in those partnerships that work, because of a lot of partnerships to fail.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some academic research around that. And if you turn it around, the reasons why partnerships fail is there's two main reasons for that. The first one is there's lack of a common goal. People sit down together, a lot of them often, a lot of stakeholders. They talk a lot, but they forget to really pin down what it is that they want to achieve together. And so as long as you don't have a clear common goal that's really supported by all of the stakeholders in your partnership, you're not going to get anywhere. You keep on talking, meeting, talking, meeting, talking, meeting, and well, you know those kinds of partnerships. It's just blah, 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 and not a lot of results. That's the first reason. So that is also the first thing you really need to do is to set that common goal. Sit down together and really say to each other, why are you in this? What's your benefit? What do you want to take out of this? Why do you want me in the partnership? What piece of the puzzle can I put on the table? All of those elements are really crucial. And then the second reason why so many partnerships fail is just the lack of good professional process design first, have a process in place to achieve that goal, and then transparent project management, really making sure that you have a roadmap in place with timings, measurable KPIs, all of the stuff that is classic in project management in big organizations. It's already difficult inside one organization, but managing those kind of things between different cultures, different organizations, having a neutral party in place to do that, it helps build confidence. So confidence, I think, the third L, which is crucial to success partnerships, you have to trust each other at a certain level. And having a common goal, knowing who's responsible for what, helps, of course, to build that trust. So I think those are the elements that are maybe diversity, which you mentioned in the stakeholders that are in the partnership, is also an important one. Maybe you can elaborate on that.
If every party brings the same piece to the table, you're not getting nowhere. It's just a diversity that makes that your project will be different and will come on a higher level. But it's very important for that in the beginning to do your stakeholder mapping. So you begin with your goal. Yeah. You say, okay, I want to achieve that, and that's my goal, in fact. And then the second thing we do, and we do it really, we take time for this, is who are the stakeholders involved? And then we go really through an exercise together with our clients. See, okay, who is in the profit? Who is in the non-profit? Who is in the academic world? Who is in government? Are there companies anywhere in the world or outside that are dealing with this same topic today and that are not in your peer group today. And so we made this mapping very, very tactful, and so you can see which parts or which elements do you need to combine to reach your goal and to reach together your goal. Then the second thing is we invite them all together. And that's also something quite different. And it's a difference between stakeholder management, which is something that we didn't invent. It exists already for a long time. But it says what it says. It's managing your stakeholders. It's mostly bilateral. I talk to you. What we do is engage them together. So we put them together and we discuss and we see who has the right pieces of the puzzle to contribute. And sometimes, and after that is an even more important part, is you have to choose. Because you can see, okay, everybody around the table has a piece or not, but who can, will, and want contribute. And then you start, in fact, your project at that moment. But that's the phase before.
So you are addressing some interesting elements. What you describe is basically a multi-stakeholder partnership.
Yes,
and
yeah.
I hesitate whether you can still call it a partnership or that it's moving towards ecosystem kind of collaboration. And Elke managed the importance of trust. But how do you build trust with multiple partners?
I think you always start with a lack of trust. That's how you usually start, because between companies that are not competitors, it's okay. It goes fairly quickly because they have a similar kind of mindset, very goal-oriented, very business-oriented, so they understand each other's language. But if it's between companies, non-profit organizations, governments, regulators, academics, they all have a different organization culture. So there is distrust always. Yep. Just at the start. That's normal. If you just already acknowledge that and you accept it, it's already a good beginning. Don't try to not talk about it. Don't try to put it under the map and not, okay, let's pretend that everyone trusts each other. That's not how it works. So it's really very often we start with exercises where we do workshops, typically half a day, and we have an agenda where we ask the right questions. And the right questions are, why are you here? What's your input on this topic? What do you want to get out of it? When would partnering with a couple of people around the table be a success for you? If you ask those questions and you have them out on the table, you fairly quickly begin to see where the glue is, as we always say. Mm-hmm. Where's the glue? I mean, okay, those people, they have something in common. There's a common thing here going on, a common issue, but also a common goal. And you fairly quickly see those around the table where there's no glue. So if you take kind of a model like this, you invite a lot of stakeholders in, put the different elements on the table and the reason why they're there. And then you can select down to a limited number of stakeholders with which you can actually build and co-create a project and then achieve your goal. So, and once you have a common goal, that's already okay. People are already comforted. Okay, I know why I'm here. I'm going to get something out of it. I know why the other people around the table are here, and I know what they want out of it. So that's what you need in the beginning. And then moving forward, you also, I think, need a little bit time together, several meetings together. In the book, we also have a chapter about group dynamics, mm-hmm. which is about, okay, you have different kind of persona in such a group. You have introverts, extroverts, people that always want to be the loudest in the room, and then people that need a couple of days to think about stuff and then only give ideas. And you need to have a system in place to capture all of those things. So it's not only the rationale of putting things and goals on paper, but it's also managing the emotions, you know, the hidden stuff in a group and how people interact.
Yes, and the hidden, and as Elke said, we really want to know why people are around the table. And sometimes it can be that someone says, I would like to...
Maybe we need to take an example.
Yeah, I'm in this group to change regulation. Another one says, I want to do business development, and that's fine. It's not good or it's bad mm-hmm. if you can express why you're in it and what your benefit will be out of it, that the others know it, but that mainly in partnerships is not know. What do you want out of this? We let express them in the beginning.
And you also create an environment in the group where it's okay for somebody to leave the group because they feel that they're not part of it, they are not contributing to it.
Yes.
Actually, you kind of, if you work with these kind of groups for several months, you get a kind of social control that's installed automatically.
Mm-hmm.
If you set the common goal, you have the process in place, the objectives, you've told everyone, your job is to do this, you do this. Those that do not follow, that do not deliver, they get socially controlled by the other ones. You say, hey, you're supposed to do this and this, and you didn't deliver. What happened? So it's a kind of it's an automatic this that pops up. It's not a top-down system where there's one boss saying, you did not deliver, you naughty person. No, it's the group that says, come on, you needed to do your job. So it's something that really happens automatically. It's But it demands, of course, first a roadmap, KPIs, timings. You first have to do that before you can actually confront people with a job well done or a job not done.
Yeah.
It is also, you also have to keep in mind that it can be a dynamic group. Sometimes there are people starting, founders, and after 1 or 2 years, there's one of the stakeholders leaving because he or she has reached his goal. And that's okay. And then can be replaced by someone else too. So it's not always rigid either. It can be groups that change or dynamic groups, which is a totally different mindset to start with.
Agree. So in your research among those all those examples, did you find the typical elements where it went wrong? Was there a common denominator that if you do this, the group will not succeed?
Of course, we talk about successful examples.
Yes.
We don't talk about those that did not work. But what we do see around us, and I'm sure it's similar in every country, I don't know the English word for it, but it's praatbaraken in Dutch, actually meaning talking, a lot of meetings, but no clear results because no clear goal. I think that is the number one must for any kind of successful partnership between different stakeholders is really, it's really setting out the goal. What do you want to achieve together? It also means that once you've achieved that goal, you can just split up the group. That's fine. It's not something that should last eternally. For example, we did a project. The techniques can also be used on a very project-based kind of way. We did a, it's for example, for a radio station in Belgium, they wanted to have a week radio about safe internet. Safe internet in terms of all of the elements, phishing, e-commerce, kids on the net, elderly people, all of those elements. And the goal you have that week of safe internet, traditionally, journalists would just call up a few people and just do it. But what we did is we brought together 40 stakeholders, companies active in the technology sectors, non-profit organizations, different experts around the teams, and they decided what the week should be about. And they were also called upon to give interviews. And also people of those stakeholders were in the call center answering the questions coming in from the radio station. So that's a very very project kind of way to do stakeholder engagement. You first set the goal, week of radio, relevant radio, meaning what are the issues we should tackle. You put together in a room the stakeholders that know something, that have expertise, content about the issue, and then you just make the radio. And so after that week, the group was dissolved. I mean, it was a two-month kind of project. Yes. So it can also be used in a very very tactical
project-based
manner.
Way. Yeah. Yes,
but a very different example, if I can add on, is one we did for Microsoft.
we launched a platform for the new way of world of working in Belgium, meaning flexible working, giving people more autonomy, having them work when they want, where they want, etc. And of course, Microsoft is a company that has been selling technology to do exactly that for decades now. So that's not a secret. They want to sell more software. But their challenge, their issue was that they mainly targeted or reached IT people, IT managers, CIOs, whereas changing this culture into a new kind of culture where you give more freedom to your employees and you let them decide when they achieve their goals, etc. It's a cultural thing. So they needed to bring on partners that could tackle that issue, that part of the problem, which are HR partners, which are a couple of government agencies, because there's some issues with the laws as well. The tax regimes around people working wherever they want are not very good in our country, so that needed to change. So we kind of built a platform with 8 partners from very different areas, and there you see they all had a piece of the puzzle, and we're now in the 4th year. It's nwalcommunity.be, by the way. We're now in the 4th year, and the group co-created what they need to do, and what they need to do, they decided on. First objective is best practice sharing, the knowledge platform. So it's events, it's workshops, it's keynotes, it's all of those things where people get together and learn from each other. And the second objective is having a better legal environment, so changing the law. So we've had a task force with some legal people in it, and they've now drafted a new law to change all of that and talking to governments and all political influencers to do exactly that. So that's more kind of a long-term objective. It's also a longer-term commitment. It's a 4th year now. But the way it works is that they get together every 2 months and we do the project management. And every year they decide on what do we need to achieve next year? What's our tactical plan? Is our vision, mission still on track or do we need to change? And we kind of manage those kinds of projects. And what you see in that coalition or in that alliance, so to speak, there have been organizations that started with us because they wanted to give it a boost. And then they decided after a year, no, we've now done the kickoff. That's fine. We don't need to stay in the alliance. And then other ones came in only last year because they only discovered the answer. Okay, maybe this is important. It's like a big bank, for example, ING, that joined last year because they're actually starting a cultural reorganization within their own company, and they want to learn from the other partners around the table. So you see, they all have, they don't all have a similar objective, but they are clear and transparent about why they are in the project and what they want to get out. And that's because we ask those questions in the groups.
Yeah.
And that builds trust.
And the objectives are not similar, but they are in line with the goal of the group.
Yes.
No, they have one goal.
Yeah.
They have one similar goal, but each one has their own interests. And these interests can be different.
Yeah. Now, when you look at your background, both of you, Cato, you said, you mentioned you worked in the internet area.
Mm-hmm.
Does technology, like the internet technology, make stakeholder engagement easier? Or because what you described so far is a lot of we bring the people in the room, so
yes.
Physical get together.
I have one first thing I wanted to mention is that for me, what are the drivers for stakeholder engagement, which is important. We didn't talk yet about that, and one of the drivers is transparency. And transparency came by technology.
Mm-hmm.
So since 2010, for me, the world has changed a bit, is that everybody, every person, every organization, every citizen can talk to a company or whatever and group each other and say we are for or against or whatever. Mm-hmm. So this means that the stakeholders of companies, of governments, of whatever, have a very loud voice today. So you can't ignore anymore your stakeholders either. So you have to see who are my stakeholders if you want to reach something and how do I take them within to reach my goal. So that's a main driver for stakeholder engagement is that transparency today. Another driver for stakeholder engagement for us is the the speed of change. The world is changing at an enormous speed today. And if your company is in business today, it can be out of business in a few years. But if you are looking inside your company, what can I do better? How can I improve my product and what's better? And you don't look constantly what's out there and what's happening out there. And you don't reach out to these stakeholders. It might be that you can go out of business. I don't say that you are going out of business, but it's an obligation, let me today, that you have to take care of those two elements, the speed of change and the transparency, which are enabled by technology. So that's for me why technology is important for stakeholder engagement, but that was not your question. We know today, and we are looking at platforms which enable these same processes online. And there are a lot of platforms and softwares which we can use at any moment. And sometimes you can say, okay, we do a kickoff live, putting people together to build the trust and whatever. But you can go on with this project online. So it can be an online and an offline project as long as you have the right tools to do the same process on and offline. I think sometimes you need to be sit together, mainly in the beginning, but it is a process, of course, that you can continue online. And when we talk online, there you see also the scaling. If you want to bring in, for example, let's say customers, and you want a different view from the people in China, as in South America or someone else, or you want them to co-create together with you, it's logic that you need technology which exists and which you can use.
But you do see in both physical or offline and online kind of meetings or brainstorms or engagement moments is the importance of the person managing the process. Also in online communities, you can have fantastic technology in place with all kinds of elements going from ideation to having SWOT analysis to adding on people at a certain moment that have certain expertises, but there's always a community manager behind it asking the right questions, saying, okay, you should get involved now because, and we need your input because, and not only that, but also, what will we do with your input? We will do something with it. We don't just ask questions. No, we're actually going to act upon those. And that's something you see in both online and offline processes. That's really key to success.
And I think that connects also to your background, Elke, when it comes to communication is essential within these partnerships.
Yes, it's communication. It's asking the right questions is part of that, but also listening. Listening to what's being said and also listening to what's not being said. You talked about confidence before. It's really kind of, you know, having the sensitivity or the hearing who should be asked another question or who should get some more speaking time. I'm speaking in a formal way. I'm realizing that it's not meant to be that way. It's really just, you know, picking up the signals really of what's happening in the group dynamic. That's important. And as you said, alliances or stakeholder partners can change. They're all in their own organization. Focuses in their organizations can change, objectives can change. So it's also very often about trying to understand how they can really score in their own company by being in the partnership.
Yeah.
What's in it for them, not only on the level of their organization, but also on a personal level. I think it's both.
And what is also important is that the partners should feel that they are equal in the partnership. And that's the reason why a third party is well placed to manage such an alignment, because we are neutral. We don't benefit the one or the other. The goal is that the project is happening. If one of the partner is in the driver's seat, you see that you can have an inequality, and that's the best reason for failure if you have inequality in your group.
Maybe another example is the city of Antwerp.
Yes.
They just launched their new campaign to attract international companies. They talk about the three B's.
Brains,
businesses, and visitors. Oh, no, it's in Dutch in the B's.
Yes.
I just realized. Sorry. That was, we managed that whole process, and we also designed the process. And there you are handling with the mayor and all of the people in the on the political level. You're also working with people that are in the administration. And then you are working with the external stakeholders, going from the big companies in Antwerp to the shopping areas, to the museum directors, to the knowledge institutions and
startups.
They all have very different...
chocolatiers, whatever.
So. They all have very different interests at the starting point. And so the idea is, how do you get them to agree on what the marketing should be about, what should be the messaging,
yeah.
what should be the DNA. And so that worked on different levels. It's also a matter of not putting everyone together immediately in the room, but sometimes first getting some insight, some views on different groups, and only then putting them together. So that's very often also
yeah.
the way we work.
But the people around the table were quite well chosen. So we managed that they were really different around the table. So we really put the people from the harbor together with Diamond, together with Chocolate, together with the Philharmonie. So that was our main goal. They couldn't choose their place at the table. We had 100 people together. And we managed them to put them together, and these discussions made really the importance of the results, because they had to understand each other why
yeah.
this was more important than that, and so they agreed upon really the positioning of Antwerp in the new city marketing, which was launched 2 weeks ago.
It's called Atypical Antwerp, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, that was the result. Atypical Antwerp with four really key themes, and the key themes were really chosen by the stakeholders. So when it was launched by the mayor, all the stakeholders were there, and everybody was applauding because everybody agreed. They said it was fantastic because yeah, they invented it. It was their idea. They contributed to it. And it even goes further. We didn't do only that part of the job. Next one was, what do we need to contribute to that marketing? Which projects do we need to support that marketing? And they held a brainstorm, and there were four projects coming out. And we kick off now in a week, in 2 weeks, the first project together with the stakeholders. And it will be, they said, we need an ambassador network for Antwerp. And they will decide who will be an ambassador, what is the role of the ambassador, when can you be an ambassador, what does an ambassador need to be an ambassador, and who will contribute to it, and which companies or organizations around the table will help in the communication of this ambassadorship. So the whole city marketing of Antwerp is designed, co-created, and executed by the stakeholders of Antwerp, by the key stakeholders of Antwerp, which is a quite atypical way to do marketing.
Absolutely, but it's the way you describe it, it's probably the only way that will work, because everybody supports it.
That's exactly. That's also
yeah.
very often, you know, the book starts with why.
Absolutely.
Why make your life so complex to involve all of those stakeholders? That's very often what you hear. Why should I do go to all this trouble, and it will take me so much time, and etc., etc.? The reason is being relevant. You are much more relevant as an organization, and if you're a city or a company, it doesn't really matter. If your ecosystem, your key stakeholders endorse what you do, if they agree with what you do, and if they co-create what you do, it's even more stronger, because people that co-create things, they're usually not against it. They
yeah.
support it. So that's very often one of the reasons why to do it.
Excellent. You already gave a lot of recommendations, but if you would give the viewer one single recommendation that they should start with when they're entering into a partnership or a stakeholder partnership, what would it be? Or let's say two. One for
yes.
each of you. One for each of you.
I think I will repeat myself, but start with why. Make sure that you know why you want to get involved with other external stakeholders. And very often, the answer to that question can be found inside your organization. Very often, we do an exercise where we talk to diverse departments or different people from a management team to really get to that point where you say, okay, this is really the challenge we want to tackle in going outside and looking for external partners. If you don't agree on that internally and you go outside too quickly, it fires back. It fires back. So that's an important one.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, one of the important things before you start is also to acknowledge that you don't know, that you don't have all parts to reach your goal. To know that. To say, I only have one part and I need the others, which is a very different mindset thing from I know everything and I'm going to impose to others and I'm going to ask and you have to come to me and I pay you, this kind of thing, is a bottom-up. The bottom-up approach is a really different mindset. And that's important before you come to the table, that you have this mindset for all parties.
Yeah.
Don't impose something else, because you know what you're, where you want to go, but you don't know yet how, because that depends on the others.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know the final destination. You know where you want to go. You want your destination. But you don't know yet how, because that depends on what the others bring in the group.
I fully agree with both recommendations. Also, when it comes to one-to-one partnerships like strategic alliances, you really need to understand why and need to understand and acknowledge that you're missing something that you need others for, that will lead you on the way to the goal.
Absolutely.
Yes. That bring you further.
Absolutely. So, I know one part of the answer of the next question, which is there a typical book that you would like to recommend? And obviously, I have one here. I will link to it in the show notes. But is there another book that you would like to recommend on the topic of stakeholder engagement?
I must say that we didn't find one in our language. That's the reason why we wrote it.
Yeah.
Yes,
but of course there are different books on topics like open innovation and the importance of ecosystems and things like that. But maybe it's more important to, I don't have a specific title in my mind, Peter, but maybe it's more interesting to look at books about group dynamics, how people work in a group and what makes them connect and what makes them disconnect. I think that maybe that's even more interesting to look at, because it's something you can really apply in any kind of group, where it would be like your club, your football club, where you go sporting every week, to the team you lead or you're a part of in your organization, to people you have to work with outside your organization. I think those are elements to learn from that can really be applied to any kind of project.
For me, it's not only books, but it's also articles and things that happen every day that are important, is to see how the new economy is changing, or how the economy is changing today. You see the peer-to-peer movement, you see the digital transformation, you see completely new companies that weren't there 10 years ago that are game changers today. Nobody had thought that Google would launch a car. It was a search engine. But if you were in the car industry, you missed something because you didn't see that and you didn't connect. So for me, it's not only, books are sometimes already outdated, but be aware of what's happening every day and try to make this exercise for your company or for your organization. How can it change my organization, and what do I have to do, and who do I have to connect with to stay on top and to be relevant also the next years?
Also,
so that's an important one for me.
I like that one, yeah.
I agree, and adding on to that on a different level is if you're looking to partner with other organizations and you have an idea about the topic or the challenge you want to tackle, you can easily go out and go to events, go to networking events where those people are. You don't need, if you're a finance director, you do not need to only go to events where there's other finance directors talking about same stuff over and over and over again. No, go out and see other people. Go to other events, other networks with other agendas and other topics. That's where you learn the most to get new insights.
Agree. And
you have to go
open your mindset, really. Yeah.
Yes. And also acknowledge that you're missing something, that you can learn outside of your own comfort zone.
Yes.
Yes.
But you have to You have to be able to listen then, of course.
I agree.
Yes. Be curious. Being curious helps a lot as well.
So, where can people find more about Glassroots and the two of you? Where can they connect with you?
You can find us on glassroots.com, of course, where you can find the information about our methodology, some cases, and of course who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can subscribe to workshops we give, and so on.
Good. I will link to it in the show notes.
That's great. Thank you.
It's easy for people to find. And is there anything you would like to share that we haven't discussed yet?
I think it's important to realize that this is a learning by doing process. Every project you're going to start with people, it's people. So you talked about trust, you talked about differences as a key element of success, but it's also a key element you have to work on. If you sit down with different people, diversity, it's very rich in itself, but it takes some time to get to know each other, to understand each other's interests, to pin down that common goal, and then to actually execute on it. So it's don't get disillusioned or accept a little bit of failure, I would say. It's a step-by-step process. You will try some stuff. Some things might succeed very quickly, and some other things you might say, okay, if this didn't work, let's try something else. And that's fine. That's normal in the process.
What I would like to add to this is that you are very courageous managers or directors to do this, because you don't know where you end, but you know that you will be better with it. It needs courage to be courageous to reach out and to do it. And maybe an African proverb says it well: if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. If you keep that in mind, I think we reached our goal.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well, I would like to thank you, Elke and Cato, for being my guests today. It was a very informative talk. I think there is a lot for people to learn from your feedback. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So far for the conversation with Elke and Cato. You can find the links and the information we discussed in the show notes over at petersimons.com. Bye for now, until next time.